than likely, in the book of Colossians. Very short book, only four chapters, and those are not very long. So we'll probably be referring back a time or two to previous chapters, but today is chapter 4. Anybody get a chance to read chapter 4?
Recording in progress.
Thank you. Reason we have in studying this chapter is to consider the importance of prayer and, of course, proper conduct to those who aren't Christians. And also to appreciate the value of workers in the kingdom, not only those who were like the assistants to Paul, but those today who continue to work on the, in behalf of the church and also to God's glory, of course. But we have deacons, we have elders, we have others who come into the building and clean, not expecting any thanks, but willing to do those things that need to be done. And I think that whenever these are done, it's to glorify God. And it's something that people are willing to do without that thought of thanks, and it's just something they want to do to contribute their value to God's family. So it's really a kind of a nice opportunity for us to say thank you to those people, those who are willing to give their time and their efforts on a day-to-day basis. Paul in verse 3, or chapter 3, verse 17. Whatever you do in word or deed, do everything in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to the Father through him. And then moving on to verse 18. Paul gives instructions on the general behavior of family members, doing things worthily, sincerely, because we are serving Christ. As such, we'll be judged by God without partiality and without favoritism. And there won't be any exceptions when God judges us. So God will judge us openly and fairly, without any favoritism. And so that's something that we need to, always thought, something we need to be on our toes about. And we're going to always have to be one step ahead of the old Satan when he comes trotting by. And he's always there to gouge us every chance he gets. So we always have to be ahead of him one step. Chapter 3, in verse 22 to 25, Paul addresses his remarks to the slaves. Also, in today's market, it would be to the employees, wouldn't it? Although I'm sure that there are slaves in certain part of the world which would fit into the slave category, but Paul is concentrating his remarks on those employees or those who are under control of someone else, be it an employee or a slave. And he says, be under respect, obey everything to your earthly masters, and not with just eye service, and not with lip service, not men pleasers. But he said, fearing the Lord, do it with singleness of heart. And whatever you are instructed to do, then do it heartily as serving the Lord, not that particular supervisor or slave owner. Then Paul jumps over it as far as our Bible is concerned. We have a break there, and it goes into chapter 4. But I think it should just continue on as one thought, and that is, in the beginning of chapter 4, Paul jumps over and talks about the masters. He's given instructions to the slaves or the employees. Now he's going to switch over and he's going to talk about the bosses. And he says to treat your employees or your slaves fairly. Treat them justly. Do what is right to those who are under you, and do not forget also that you have a master in heaven. Is that how we should treat or think about treating our employees today?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Regardless of whether you're a supervisor or maybe a store manager, assistant manager, something like that, someone who is in control of others, then we're under scrutiny, aren't we, as employers, as managers, and so forth. God scrutinizes us just as he does the slaves, doesn't he? And we are to be treated just like those slaves were treated, with honesty and with fairness, no partiality. Kind of a reminder in Romans chapter 14, verse 12, it says that God sees all. All our conduct in all situations. And Romans 14 says, each of us shall give an account of himself to God. Look at chapter 4, verse 2. Continue steadfastly in prayer. Give constant attention to prayer. Does this apply to us today, just like it would to these people back in 2,000 years ago? Sure it does. We need to be steadfast. Does that mean that we need to pray all the time?
You can if you want.
Can if you want. But it means to be steadfast. Don't forget prayer. Isn't that what he's saying here? Don't forget. And we're all told in various other places throughout the Bible to pray constantly. But it doesn't mean, you know, you've got to pray 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But you always need to keep God foremost in your mind, don't you? All the time. And it doesn't mean that you have to stand on the street corner like the Pharisee did. But you can go into your closet. Does that mean, you know, you can go, can if you want. But you can say a prayer without even uttering a word out loud. If you pray in your mind and in your heart. And those things are probably more, I don't know, maybe a direct link to God than saying a prayer openly, but it gives you just a sense of peace and well-being when you do that. Ephesians 6:18 tells us to pray at all times in the Spirit, with all prayer and supplication, and to that end, keep alert with all perseverance, making supplication for all the saints. What does keep alert with perseverance? What does that mean to us today? Anybody?
To me, it just means being alert to what's going on in the world and how I want to be separate from the world and to just be aware of Satan's influence on the world and on us too, because we are in part of the world. To be on guard.
That's being alert, isn't it? I stood guard duty when I was in the service. And, boy, you got caught not being alert. We used to call me getting gigs, pink slips. And there was some terrible thing that they would slap on you as a punishment, you know. So, when you were out there, you had to really be careful. I remember one time I was in Wichita Falls, Texas, in tech school, and we had a tornado that roared through town and just really made a mess of everything. And there was stuff floating out of the sky for days. Couldn't see anything on the ground at all. It was just covered as far as you could see with garbage. I was fortunate because they pulled a bus up in front of our barracks there and fell us in and counted noses. 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2. Says, okay, all the ones get on the bus here. So we got on the bus and they drove us over to the armory and they issued us carbines. Said, you guys are going to go down and you're going to pull guard duty down here in town in the residential section to scare off the looters. And so they posted us ever so many yards apart. But they wouldn't give us any ammo. They didn't give us any ammo. Said, just go bang, bang. They'll get the idea. So they'll think they don't know, just don't tell them you don't have any ammo and everything will be just fine. Just be alert and make sure that nobody gets into these premises while you're on guard duty. And so that's what we were. We were trying to be as sharp as we possibly could. Especially since we didn't have any ammo. So anyway, it was just one of those things. So I have to absolutely be alert. When you're praying, it tells us not to let indifference creep into your thoughts and let your thoughts wander. So you need to keep I've forgotten the word I wanted to use. But you need to keep... I'm sorry?
Alert?
Well, alert, yeah. It wasn't the word I wanted, but it tells the same thing.
Vigilant?
Yeah, vigilant is an excellent word. Thank you. But you need to watch. Be watchful in prayer with a thankful heart. Remember back in Matthew chapter 26, just before Jesus is arrested in the garden, he took three disciples with him, dropped the rest of them off, and he walked on a little ways further and took three disciples with him. And he said, okay, why don't you stay here, and I'm going to go up here and pray for a little ways, a little while. And so Jesus walked on for a distance. And he prayed for an hour. And when he came back, they were all asleep. He woke them up. And he says, you mean to tell me that you couldn't stay awake and alert for 1 hour? And so he left them again, and he went and prayed, and he came back, found them asleep again. He came back another time and still found them asleep. I don't know, is this an example of the spirit is willing and the flesh is weak? But it had to be a disappointing thing for Jesus to come back, not only once, but three times, and find him back asleep. Yes, John?
You mentioned, you said, you know, when we pray, not to let your mind wander. I think the word you might have been also looking for was like more focus, more of a focus when you pray.
Yeah.
You know, Jesus said in Matthew 6, starting in verse 5, and when thou prayest, thou shalt not be as the hypocrites are, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and in the corners of the streets, that they may be seen of men. Verily I say unto you, they have their reward. But thou, when thou prayest, enter in thy closet, and when thou hast shut thy door, pray to thy Father, which is in secret, and thy Father which seeth in secret shall reward thee openly. But when you pray, use not vain repetitions as the heathen do, for they think that they shall be heard for their much speaking. Be not ye therefore like unto them, for your Father knoweth what things ye have need of before you ask him. So
yeah, focus was the word I was looking for. But we need to put everything else out of our mind, don't we, and concentrate on that.
I think the whole premise here is going into the closet is removing all distractions.
That's right. That's exactly right. And that's, how can you pray effectively or pray a prayer that God will accept when you're off in space someplace thinking about the now? You're not putting your concentration on the right spot, are you? And that is, forget everything else, put it all out of your mind, and have that conversation with God. Verse 5 of chapter 4 says, conduct yourselves wisely towards outsiders. What does that mean? Who is he talking about, outsiders here?
Outside of the body. Outside of the body.
Okay. Okay. Non-Christian. People who are in the world. Why should we conduct ourselves wisely? What would be the purpose of that? Other than just being, you know, whenever we conduct ourselves, we need to be careful. But what does that exactly mean? Conduct yourselves wisely towards outsiders. Ted?
Well, we're supposed to be people who are putting on a Christian attitude in such a way that makes people ask why we have joy in situations where other people don't. Then part of that is conducting ourselves in a way that would encourage people those questions. That would be a wise way for a Christian to always conduct themselves.
We need to have a ready answer for those people who ask questions of us, don't we? What does that mean? It means we better know what we're talking about. We need to study to find those things. So we can give a ready answer for the hope that's in it. And that's, thank you, Chad. I appreciate that. And that is exactly true. You know, people who are in the world see you from day to day and they watch you. They watch you to see if you're sincere. See whether, they're going to slip up one of these days. And they're going to say something they shouldn't have said, or they're going to get upset when they shouldn't have been upset. That's not very Christian-like. And, you know, they're going to be watching you. People will do that. Other Christians will watch other Christians too, as far as that's concerned. But when we have outsiders we work with from day to day, they're going to be watching us. They know you're a Christian. And our conduct should show that we are faithful Christians. Paul tells us to walk in wisdom and be alert and be watchful. We need to watch very wisely. We need to walk in faith very wisely. If we do this, what's going to be the consequences of watching ourselves and being careful with outsiders, with anybody for that matter? But if we have certain conduct, what's going to be the results of that? When you may not even say a word, but if you ask or you act in a way that you should be, you may end up, isn't that planting seed? Sure it is. You're planting seed, aren't you? You might not even open your mouth, but you're planting seed. You're being an example to others. And who knows, you might just win a soul to Christ. Might just win a soul to Christ. In verse 3 of chapter 4, Paul's asking for the congregation in Colossae's prayers for doors to be opened by God so that they may proclaim the mystery of Christ. What's interesting to me is this guy, Paul, he's in prison. He doesn't know whether or not he's going to make it from day to day. Maybe the next day he's going to get his head chopped off or crucified or whatever. But he is waiting for a verdict. And yet, he's asking the Colossians to pray for him that there might be a door opened, that he can share the mysteries of Christ. Look for opportunities to teach Christ. Should we be doing that today? Absolutely. Every opportunity that we get. While he was in prison there in Rome, he converted Onesimus. You remember that story, Onesimus, the slave that ran off from Philemon? I don't know. You know, that was, I think I looked that up one time. It was like 1,200 miles from Colossae to Rome, and yet Onesimus ran off and ended up being contacted by Paul and converted by Paul. And Paul knew Philemon. And how interesting is that? Was that by accident? Well, I don't know. But it seems like there was a connection there, and Paul certainly took advantage of it when he found Onesimus and converted him. Paul says, when he is greeting these, he says, so-and-so greets you, This guy has prayers for you. Even those send greetings who are in the palace. So every opportunity, even those jailers that he had while he was in prison in Rome, some of those became Christians. And so Paul is looking for opportunities all the time, every day, even though he's in prison. What, you know, we're out. None of us are in prison. Do we take advantage of the opportunities presented in front of us? I don't know. I don't. I have lots of opportunities I have had that I've passed up. And maybe not on purpose, but maybe out of being timid, afraid to say something, afraid if I do, I'll just offend them. You know, I regret those opportunities missed, but you just pray to the Lord that He'll give you the strength and the courage to say something the next time. Paul is proclaiming Christ. And that's why he's in prison in the first place, isn't it? And he prays for their help through prayer to speak clearly and that his speech is proper and understood by others. In verse 5 and 6 of chapter 4, Paul writes, let your speech always be gracious, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how to speak and answer everyone. That we can adopt God's message and speak appropriately to one another. Christians are always supposed to be gracious, aren't they? Pleasant. Who wants to be around an old grouch? Always be courteous, wholesome. Bob?
What would that mean to be seasoned with salt?
Yes, anybody want to answer that? What does it mean, be seasoned with salt?
Does that indicate if there's no salt, then it, maybe it's flat, undesirable maybe?
Yeah, not very tasteful.
Ron? I think
maturity. Yes, Carol, go ahead.
Yeah, well, salt is a preservative, and the gospel preserves our soul. So if you season your life with salt, you are preserving your soul and you're being gracious to the other person the way God was gracious to you.
Yeah. Ted?
I think Jesus gives us great examples of seasoning with salt, though. He had a unique ability to teach people in ways that they understood. And he gives us great examples of how to do that through, you know, these parables. But he can bring even the most difficult terms into layman's understanding because he seasoned his speech with salt. He made it understandable. He made it something that people wanted to hear. And so I think we can take an example from him in always trying to portray our message to others in a way that they can understand better.
It's kind of, you know, and like Ted mentioned just now, Jesus was able to talk to people on their own level, wasn't he? Their own understanding. He was able to present it so that they could understand what he meant. And he did. He used the parables a lot. So that and somebody asked him, well, why do you use these stories? Like, well, so that they can understand. Otherwise, they wouldn't understand what I was saying. But I think it speaks of maturity, well seasoned with salt. If you know what you are wanting to say, able to say, you have to have the knowledge, don't you? And we need to season our learning with just study. And so I think you always be ready to give an answer to those that ask about the hope that's in you. And that's sometimes difficult to do. I find that a lot of times if someone asks you a question and your answer is in the form of a question to them, gets a conversation going, kind of takes a little pressure off of your back and puts the pressure on them. And sometimes that works pretty good. This last chapter is fairly short, and it talks about the various people that are with Paul and the greetings that they send on to the Colossians. In verse 7, Tychicus and Onesimus are being sent by Paul to fill the Colossians in on everything that he's doing and how his affairs are. Along with the greetings, he mentions Barnabas's cousin Mark and Luke, Justus, and Demas. Do you remember Demas from elsewhere? That name strike a bell? He's with Paul at this particular time. But these were Jews that were with Paul there in Rome. Some of them prisoners along with Paul, and some of them not. He also mentions Epaphras, one of their own, from Colossae, one who prays hard for them, as well as those in Laodicea. And Paul also adds, please, when you're through reading this letter, send it to Laodicea and be sure to read the one from there. Kind of interesting here, we don't know, do we, about the letter sent to Laodicea? Is it not recorded for us? So apparently Paul wrote letters or messages to other places and other people that weren't recorded for us in the Bible. Some commentators, and I researched this a little bit too, but some commentators are of the belief that the letter that he refers to here from Laodicea was the Ephesian letter that Paul wrote to the Ephesians. Now, Ephesus was a city also in what is today Turkey, along with Colossae and Laodicea. They weren't that far apart as far as mileage was concerned. And when Paul wrote the book of Ephesians, he wrote it to a group of people there, and it was kind of a circulating letter. Went from congregation to congregation. And this is what some commentators believe happened, but we're not told that, are we? So it's just conjecture, yes.
Well, the Laodicea was one of the seven churches of Asia, right?
That is right, mentioned in Revelation 3.
So we can learn something about Laodicea through that.
Yeah, it wasn't, I think it was like 9 miles from Colossae. And there's also another town just a few miles, like 3 or 4 miles down the road, that Paul mentions as well. I've forgotten the name of that. can't remember. Anyway, there was another town just a few miles from Laodicea, and they mentioned the church there as well, and to be sure and share the letter with them. So regardless of whether this was a letter to the Ephesians that was being circulated or a separate letter that Paul wrote to the church in Laodicea, we just don't have the instructions or the knowledge of whether or not that was the same. So I'm assuming we have other examples of books being referred to that are not printed for us, not in our Bibles. But there is reference to them, some of them in the Old Testament. Regardless of whether or not we have these messages or these letters that were not printed in our Bibles, we have enough information to be faithful Christians, don't we? So God made sure that the information out there that we have is enough to be faithful. Verse 17, skip down there. Paul mentions a young man named Archippus, who was also from Colossae. And some people think that he was Philemon's son. And I think that Philemon's wife was Appia. I believe that is correct. Also from that area. Verse 18, Paul says, remember his bonds. And I think this might be a request for prayers that he might be released from prison. But I can just picture Paul sitting there at his writing desk with chains around his ankles and his hands, writing this letter. He said he wrote it with his own hand. Anybody remember Demas? Remember in 2 Timothy, Paul refers to him as one of his co-workers. But in 2 Timothy 4, he also refers to him as one who deserted him for this present world. So Demas dropped off, went back to the world, and he was a disappointment to Paul. I appreciate the study that we've done in Colossians, also Philippians, both short letters. Real enjoyable to learn some things studying these two short books. I don't know for sure what's going to be happening next Sunday morning. Lenny will be back on Saturday. I don't know. I was thinking he wanted to start out in the first chapter of Acts, but I am not sure about that. I checked with him this afternoon in the elders' meeting and see what he had in mind. If not, I would appreciate it if you would take a few minutes and read the book of Philemon. Philemon was a citizen of Colossae, and so this book that we've been studying was addressed to him as well, but I think it was addressed as a to the group as a whole, where the book of Philemon is a personal letter to Paul, or to Philemon, about the slave Onesimus. And it's just one chapter, very short, but gives us an indication of who Paul was concerning slaves and the duty of slaves, as well as the duty of owners. And I think Paul is, it's interesting in Philemon because Paul is a little sneaky. I don't know, but he says, you know, you owe me your life, but I'm not going to mention that. You know, so treat Onesimus as a brother. You know, not that you owe me anything for saving your life, and you know. So it's an interesting study of a very, very short book, and if you get a chance to read it, I think you'll glean a lot of information from it, and also we'll be prepared for next Sunday. If we don't start another lesson. But you guys have been great. Thank you for all your comments and appreciate your time with us. I wish everybody well on Zoom. Thank you so much for being with us this morning. And